Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we're going to be talking with two guests that I'm honored to have here with me in the studio about their experience starting and growing a new business. We'll also be asking them to talk about the importance of knowing your customer and building your brand and having that brand message that reaches the customer. And first, I want to introduce you to these great guests. And first up, I want to introduce you to Ann Close. A certified professional in human resources, or PHR, are the letters after her name, from the Society of Human Resources Association, SHRM. SHRM's what a lot of us say, pronounce that as. Ann is the owner, founder, and key consultant for Close HR Connections. In her consulting firm, she focuses on growing startups and small businesses and helping them address the HR issues, the people issues, the compliance issues around people and managing and leading organizations on what's known as a fractional basis, meaning if you don't have the needs, the time, or the money for a full-time person, Ann's the one you call. She has over 20 years of HR experience as an HR generalist, and she worked her way up through those organizations, and now she shares that experience with startup tech firms, corporate headquarters, small and local businesses. Ann is also experienced in developing what they call HR game plans for businesses, and I'm going to let her explain that to us in just a little bit. But an HR game plan gives us the ability to be defensive, offensive, and build special teams with regards to strategy in addressing the business goals of a company. Ann is an active volunteer with Wake Human Resources Management Association, the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce, where I met Ann and invited her on the show. And she's also a volunteer leader serving at Hope Community Church. And I'm going to call out on Ann's website in case you want to learn more about Ann during or after the show. It's www.close, C-L-O-S-E, HRConnections.com. Now, my second guest, I have to do full disclosure. I've known Molly for years through a business club, and recently Molly became a client of mine when she started her new venture as an independent financial advisor. She's based out of Mooresville, and she is an entrepreneur, a small business owner in startup mode. She's out there finding the clients and getting her message out. And she's going to share with us the joys and the challenges of starting a business and being in that first year of operations. She owns her own company that she now has complete and total control over. So she can do things the way that she feels they need to be done with a relationship with her customer. She's independent and she enjoys the challenge of being out there in the field and bringing a message, especially to the target customer that she has, women. And I want her to share a little bit about that messaging for women out there about taking financial control of your life. And so she's going to offer to her customers a different perspective, and she's going to share that perspective as she talks about her company and achieving true independence financially, personally, and professionally by having her own company. And she'll share about her key values in running that business. So I want to thank them both for being on the show. And we're just going to have this great conversation today. We're just going to sit back and talk about what it's like to be in business, to be women business owners, to be out there starting, running, and growing a business. And I want you to first start with just sharing a little bit of your background, more so than I just gave them the flavor for, and letting them know a little bit about your businesses. So tell our listeners, and I'm going to start with you, a little bit more about yourself and explain Close HR Connections.
All right. Good morning. It's good to be on the show, and thank you, Lee. For me, I really felt like I was going to go into finance after college. I had my first finance job, and I felt like it was not the right thing for me, and I was like, at this point, what do I do now? I was given the opportunity to interview for an HR position and really enjoyed hearing about HR, so I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and I had the opportunity that someone took a chance on me and took me under their wing and basically taught me everything I needed to know about HR in a new position. And basically after that, God gave me opportunities to be in startups, small businesses throughout the Triangle area, I also had an opportunity to work for Golden Corral's corporate office and really get into benefits and retirement plans. Then I jumped back into the startup world, and really that's where my heart was, with small businesses. In July of 2009, I was laid off with probably half of America, and it was at that point I was like, I just need to find a job because I just wanted a regular paycheck. But I really felt like God was saying, you need to start your own business. But I was like, I think you have the wrong person.
Was that a who, me?
That was exactly right. I don't think so. So I tried really hard to open doors. After about 4 months, I realized that nothing was working. So defiantly, I said, fine, I'll start my own business, but you're going to have to help me out. And it's been an awesome roller coaster ride. There's been highs. There's been lows. It's been challenging. It's been rewarding. It's been an awesome experience, and I'm just really thankful to be able to work with small businesses now on a fractional basis, as you mentioned. I know small business owners work really hard. They have to do thousands of things, and when you get to a certain point, you just don't have time to deal with the employee issues, but you can't afford to put on a full-time person with the overhead and the salary. But what do you do? So I wanted to focus in on those small businesses that have a need on a fractional basis so they can just pick up the bat phone, so to speak. And give
I call
me
it phone a friend.
There you go, phone a friend. And I can sit down with them and listen to what their needs are and then come up with a game plan. And I'm big into sports. This area is heavily into sports, if nobody knows that. And so, the best offense is a great defense. So in HR, defense is compliance issues. In the state of North Carolina, in the United States, what do you have to do to have a business? You might not like it or agree with it, but what do you have to do? So let's check those boxes. Set that defense on the bench and bring the offense out and grow your team and add employees and train them and start a new business line and go after new clients. Really focus on the offense. And then the special teams is, what's your story for those prospective employees? You have a story for marketing, so what's your story for new employees? And then giving back to the community. That's very important. Nobody does it alone anywhere.
Amen.
So, what can you do to reach out and help somebody else? So your offense, defense, and special teams is your HR game plan. And your HR game plan is in lockstep with your business plan. And as your business plan grows and changes, your HR plan grows and changes with it so that you always have that support and you're working from a strength, position of strength, because you have great people that know what they're supposed to do, that are passionate about what they're doing. And it's just an awesome opportunity to work with all the small business owners here in the Triangle.
That's great. All right, Molly, your turn.
Okay.
Share with the audience about your journey into arriving at the new financial advisory firm that you've started and just what it is you want to do with that business and who do you want to reach?
Right. I want to take everybody back to the movie Million Dollar Baby. Does everybody remember that movie,
mm-hmm.
Clint
Absolutely.
Eastwood? Mm-hmm. And one of the main themes of that movie was protect yourself. This is what I find that women abdicate a bit, probably a bit too much. There's a gap between financial savviness of men and women. And I feel like women at this point can go into battle if they want. They can become a fireman if they want, or a fire person. They can do anything they want, but until they close that gap of financial knowledge, they're going to be a little bit behind. They're not going to have quite as much power.
And women, Or as many options.
50% of all marriages end in divorce. 67% of women who go through a divorce wind up on the poverty line. And that's because they don't take the time to educate themselves. They don't take the time to become involved in the finances and be knowledgeable. And it is detrimental to women to not know this information. They've got to know. Because when a marriage falls apart, the children, for the most part, wind up on the women's shoulders. So women have got to step up for themselves. They've got to step up for their kids. This is an area where they need to know. And it's almost like when I work with women, they don't know what they don't know. And a lot of what I do is educate.
Well, and we've sort of talked about this from even a business role. A lot of times we step out as women business owners. And the part we don't want to pay attention to are those compliance issues, those financial issues. I'm not good with numbers or, those kind of things. Or it's just intimidating. It's a language a lot of people don't grow up speaking.
That's true.
My household growing up, my mother kept the checkbook. And I'll kind of throw out a funny story here. My mom used to work in banking. And I remember being really little and answering the phone, and someone being on the other end of the line from the bank that my mom had worked with said, "Is your mom sick?" I was like, "Did Dad bounce a check?" Right? Because he didn't balance the checkbook. He wrote checks. And it's like, yeah. And they're like, okay, you know, back then, in those days, and we're not going to say how many years ago that was, but, you know, it was a community bank. It was a, somebody that you had a relationship with, and it didn't really balance the check. They just knew something was wrong.
Right.
Because mom was in charge of the money and the check writing in our household. But it's startling to me. I think the gap, and this is sort of a little bit off topic, but it connects in. When we're out in the workplace, women make less money. And I argue it's because not that someone's undervaluing us, but we're undervaluing ourselves. We're not taking responsibility in business for setting our prices appropriately,
yes,
demanding that we're paid what we're worth for the value we're contributing. We don't negotiate well. We don't take charge and have a comfortable relationship with money personally. And that translates to our business, our professional lives, our salaries, our pricing, our reaching out into the marketplace. Do you ladies find that?
Oh, definitely. It's all about how you value yourself. And women need to step into this arena of money and realize it's really not that hard. It's not that scary. But you do have to take some time and learn about it.
And like you said, educate yourself.
You do have to. I mean, I love to show women the miracle of compound interest. I put a compound interest chart down in front of women, and most of them have never seen one before. And when I explain to them this is how it works, I can see them just staring at the chart with the light bulbs going off. It's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my money. This is not for, my money's not for 50 pairs of shoes or a purse that costs $300. If I take this money and I invest it well, 20, 30 years down the road, you got a nice chunk of change to take care of yourself, take care of your kids for a crisis, for anything that may come your way, you can handle it.
Right, or to do the fun things.
And to do
to
the
buy that $300
yeah.
purse later, or those 50 pairs
later.
Of shoes. Or to give back to your community, to support your local nonprofit community radio station.
That's right.
There's a lot of things that we can do, and I think the things that we do in our personal lives that you're talking about, male or female, I'm gonna put it down to this because I know a lot of my male clients don't understand balancing checkbooks or numbers any better than the women you're talking about, Molly. But what we have to realize in starting a business, we don't know what we don't know,
That's
as
true.
Anne, as
right.
you said earlier.
Definitely.
We don't really know what people around us really know when we meet those consultants out on the street saying, "Let me help you."
Yeah.
Oftentimes they sound good, but is
yeah.
there any substance behind that?
Sure. Yeah, we've been having this conversation with a couple clients this week about someone that they've been encountering, and he's a really great salesperson. And the problem is he's a really great salesperson because he can sell anything. He just forgets that there has to be a delivery after he sold
delivery.
It. And so when we're looking at as small business owners in the startup mode, 3 or 4 years in, 5 or 6 years in, 11 years in, like myself, there's still things we don't know we don't know.
That's true.
There's still things we need to address. And so right now, let's think about what are those challenges that you've had in starting your business and finding the customer, and how have you been dealing with those? Anne, I'm going to let you kick that one off, too.
For me, personally, I saw the need in the small businesses between about 10 and 50 employees, again, and somewhere in the $200,000, $250,000 revenue arena as a sweet spot for me. Again, they have employees. They have, things start happening. The business owner is still heavily involved in the day-to-day operations and doesn't have the time to sit down and either deal with, Jim and John are, at each other's throat, or, Sally's not necessarily performing up to par. So finding those people is basically connecting and networking, telling everybody that, you're connected with, what your business is, what needs you can meet, and do they know somebody. And then I know for me in the beginning, it was pretty much I was willing to talk to anybody that was willing to talk to me just to get my feet, on the ground and, get some client experience behind me. But as my business has grown, I've been, fine-tuning that. What is the ideal client? What works best for me? And that's still a work in progress. But I know that it's definitely someone that sees HR as an investment in their company, and not that necessary evil expense. Please get away from me. You're basically in the same category as the IRS, and I've had people tell me that before. But it's the people that want to do the right thing, not the ones that are saying, well, what can I get by with? What do I really have to do? Can I just wait till I get audited? And, you know, at that point I know, well, the audit is coming. It's just a matter of when, not if. And do you want to be proactive or do you want to clean up the mess and write a big check to the government after the fact?
And it's much more painful and much more expensive after the fact.
Very much so.
And I always try to tell everyone that it is much easier to and less costly to be compliant from the beginning than to clean up any mess.
Amen.
So you start throwing money in that hole to fill up that hole where you've made the mistakes. And the IRS isn't always that forgiving.
Ignorance is not a defense when it comes to either the law or the IRS.
Yeah, and well, we won't go there. Molly, what has been your biggest challenge in starting in the startup mode with your business right now?
I think the biggest challenge is defining exactly who my target client is. When you start a business, you start thinking, oh, I'm just going to help everybody. And that doesn't work. You really have to define who it is you want to help. And that will help you use your time wisely so that you're targeting people that you do want to work with. You can't really say that you want to help everybody or I want to do everything. You want to be everything to everybody. You have to define it. And that comes down to writing your business plan ahead of time, defining exactly what it is that you want so that
you don't spin your wheels. You don't waste your time.
You'll get to your target faster.
Well, Ann and I were talking about this at lunch a couple of weeks ago, that we have to learn to say no to certain customers, too.
I'm learning that.
You know, you think you can help them. And I always said when I started my business, I promised myself I would not do flat forehead syndrome, which is where you beat your head against a brick wall trying to get someone to listen to you.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to be conscious of as we start our business, as we continue through our business, as the economy cycles and you have low periods. And you'll find you take a customer and it's not a good fit. It's not a good thing for them. It's not a good thing for you. And it just doesn't feel good when you can't help that person and you can't get that message across.
Yeah, I find that's where I have to sort of walk the talk, because I encourage my clients, when you have an employee that's not working out, don't just turn a blind eye and hope it gets better or that they'll just move on. You need to address the situation, and if it comes down to it, then you need to terminate them and get a person in there that's gonna. So if I have a client, it's not gonna go away. I need to address it, and if it's not gonna work, then I need to be able to say, this is not working, and let's part ways and let them go find a resource that is better fitted for them and likewise. But that's definitely a hard conversation to have, but it's very necessary.
So next week we're going to be talking about organization and on the show and managing time and things like that. So I want to ask you guys a question. How are you at managing your time spent with the clients plus the time out prospecting for clients and then the time that you have to spend working on the administrative and the technical parts of your business, staying current in your literature, staying up to date? I know I spend hours reading materials and things like that. Has that been a big challenge? How are you managing that? And I'm going to let Molly lead off on that.
That is a massive challenge. It really truly is. And it takes a lot of just getting your feet wet to figure out how you're going to do it. But what I've started doing is just blocking out the calendar and sticking to it.
Making an appointment with yourself.
Yes, exactly. Because it is hard. And you also have to manage clients who they may want to take up 2 to 3 hours of your time when you've always only scheduled 1 hour. You have to learn how to handle that. So it's definitely a great big old challenge, takes a lot of practice, but it's like most things when you have your own business, you do get there with practice.
Anne?
I agree. It's a huge challenge for me. And with me, client might call tomorrow and say, hey, you know, I caught Joe stealing. I need to address this situation. Can you come out tomorrow morning? So oftentimes I don't have as much control over my schedule as I would like. And it definitely ebbs and flows. I mean, I do a really good job for a couple of days, and then a couple of days it's not so much. But I agree with trying to have an appointment with yourself and blocking off time to, you know, go to a seminar and catch up on the latest and greatest on healthcare reform or, other opportunities to hone my skill set, as well as opportunities to go out and network, because you have to keep your pipeline going and have opportunities to have client meetings, and then all the deliverables that go along with that. So it's definitely a juggling act, and there's times where I drop it, but I pick it back up and try to keep, get going again And it's just one of those things where I don't think you ever, like, arrive, but it's always, you know, something that you're fine-tuning on a daily basis to meet the needs all the way around.
So here's a confessional time. So I have to ask, how good are you at keeping up to date and current on all the technical things, the compliance things, your accounting, your admin things? Because I find with a lot of us solo operators that we don't do what we don't like to do when we procrastinate with that part. So one of my friends and colleagues, I will say he has procrastinated 2 years now, and he is working on his accounting and bringing it up to date now. I'm sure the IRS will be calling, and I'll be the phone a friend. But it's one of those challenges. What is it that you don't enjoy doing in your business, when we're honest about it? And how are you at managing that and making sure it doesn't get too far behind?
Two things for me is actually writing the handbooks and job descriptions. I can do it. It's not my favorite thing. It's not necessarily what brings the most value, but it's something tangible that people, you know, obviously they need, and comes out of our conversations and our HR game plan. I'm to that point where I'm taking a great leap of faith to reach out and connect with other HR mm-hmm. people that are subcontracting, whether it's supplementing their current job or maybe they're testing the waters themselves. But being able to reach out and basically give back to other people, and just trusting that the opportunity that then frees up for me to spend more time with building my business and clients, that I'll be able to have the revenue to take care of that. And the other thing, definitely I hate the paperwork and the accounting side. I can do it. But again, one of my goals for 2014 was to reach out to another small business owner that's a bookkeeper, and I've turned everything basically over to them, and I'm just trusting that I know they can do a way better job, and it'll take less time, and that'll again free up more opportunity for me. But it took a while to get to that point, and after so many nights at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to send out invoices or balance my checkbook, it's like there's got to be a better way.
So there's a good lesson there for everyone listening, is that if you're not good at it, or I always make the rule too, is if the hour I spend is at a rate billable to my client greater than what I would pay for someone else to do it, then I should probably be paying someone else to do it.
Exactly.
I can do my taxes, but I don't like doing my taxes. And so handing that off gives you more capacity to
Absolutely.
Do, one, what you enjoy, and two, what you're in business to do.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to neglect our own HR issues or
That's
our own
right.
documentation issues or
it's
our own accounting.
It's hard to let go. It's very hard to let go, but you need to get to that point because that's their sweet spot. Let them do what they do, and you do what you do. And not only are you helping another, you know, person or small business, but you're also obviously really helping yourself out.
Right. Molly, what would you say the biggest thing you like to get off your plate right now?
I have a lot of paperwork, a lot of follow-up, a lot of paperwork, a lot of rules, a lot of regulations. The financial industry tends to come at you pretty fast and furiously. Lots of changes, lots of requirements. They keep a very close eye on everybody, which is good. They
mm-hmm.
should. But there are mandatory conference calls, and there are certain ways to do things. And in a way, it's good because it sets guidelines, and that's helpful to stick to. But definitely, I have to have a support person to help me with all of that because, as Ann said, you wind up doing all the support activities. And as you said, you could be out earning a little bit more money than filing and faxing. And
I remember my accountant asked me, "Why are you doing this? If you know having me do this, if you know how?" I said, "I bill out much higher than you do. I don't like doing it. I'll be honest. I do compliance, and I can do the tax compliance and the grant and the contracting compliance. But sitting down to fill out an IRS form is definitely not good for my stress level, my blood pressure, or my business." So let's kind of shift a little focus just for a little bit and think.
Right.
Molly, earlier you said something about the challenge of finding the right customer.
Correct.
If you think about it, we've been talking about the importance of women taking control and having financial responsibility. So if I'm going to assume, we try not to assume, but actually I kind of know the answer to this. If that's your target market, how are you reaching out to define that and refine that? Because you can't serve every woman. Is there a narrower niche? Are you starting with college students? Or are you starting with women going through divorce? Or what are you doing, and how did you come to that decision?
Yeah, I mostly am looking for women who are in a transition of some sort. So it could be going from college into the workplace. I love working with younger women because I can get them on the right path really soon. But it's also women going through transitions. Perhaps they are going back to work. Perhaps they've been laid off. Perhaps they're going through a divorce. This is a time when women tend to get a little lost. They tend to get emotional and fearful, and I like to walk them through how they can maintain control and keep an eye on their spending and think of all the issues that they need to think of so that when they get through this phase in their life, they come out on the other end in a good spot.
So when you're out there looking, where do you go in your networking and your connecting to find the right customer that you're looking for? And how are you standing out from, and I've talked about on the show before, I go to a networking event and there's 30 people there and I swear 28 of them are financial advisors.
I know, we're everywhere.
Or not, I'm exaggerating. But you go
that's
in,
true. And I remember, I find that true as well.
I remember being in a chamber event one time, and the first person stood up as a financial advisor and explained what they did. The next guy goes up, I'm a financial advisor too, and all that applies, but I work for, so call me. You know, it's just like, that messaging, and we've talked about it in our sessions together. It's like, how are you honing that message so that when you stand up in the room, you're not just another financial advisor?
Right. Well, I do mention, my ideal referral is a woman going through a transition, but also as an independent, that sets me apart from a lot of other financial advisors. I don't work for a company.
So explain that a little bit.
Sure. We use the term captured advisor, which is basically an advisor working for a large financial house like a Northwestern or an Edward Jones. They have managers. And they have products that they need to sell.
And you mean that they need to sell? So they're locked into a product, either a range or a subset of products that only those are what they can offer?
Correct. There's usually a subset of what they can offer. What I do is custom design portfolios. Because my primary allegiance is to my client and not to a company, I have access to hundreds of mutual funds from different companies. And that allows me to customize for the client.
So rather than going to a menu and having to select the configuration, I'm ordering the steak and it comes with a lobster tail and that, and that's the only way you can get it.
Correct.
And you have to take it well done. You can't have
Correct.
It medium, and you can't you're going to a menu that's a la carte and says, well, okay, I can have shrimp instead of a lobster, and I can have steamed rather than, and you get to configure it if we think of a menu of offerings. And that's what you're talking about.
That's it exactly. And what that allows me to do is serve the needs of the client, to serve the goals of the client. I'm not saying to the client, you need to pick from product A, B, C, or D. It's more of, let's figure out exactly where your risk tolerance is. Let's figure out exactly what you want to accomplish, and let's go look at all these funds that are going to get you where you want to go.
So we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to pray that my music works this time for the break. Last week, I had a little bit of technical difficulty, and when we come back, we're going to have Ann answer our question about finding the right customer and differentiating in the marketplace. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Focus on Business with Lee Strickland. And we are back with our guests, Ann Close of Close HR Connections, and Molly Levitt. And Molly, I have failed to tell them the name of your company yet. So why don't you tell us the name of your business and give them a shout out on your website too. I gave Ann's earlier.
Sure. Yeah, it's Levitt Financial Group, North Carolina. And it's LFGNC.com.
Give that one more time. I don't think I had it up quite loud enough.
Levitt Financial Group, North Carolina. Website is www.lfgnc.com.
Oh, right. And ladies, before the break, we were talking about the challenges of finding our customers and differentiating ourselves. And HR is another one of those things, like accounting, that everybody says they do it. But how do you stand out from those people that you're competing against when you're out there at the chamber events and out there talking to the public and looking for customers?
Well, again, for me, it's connecting with the small business owners, listening to what their needs are, basically sharing my story, starting my own business. I can connect with them that way, but also basically connecting them with my sports analogies. If I just talk HR geek, you know, they turn me off. So I had to figure out a way to get past that. And again, being the sports fan that I am, talking about defense and offense and special teams, I could see where all of a sudden some of those walls would start coming down and they would actually start, you know, saying, yeah, I understand. Yeah, you're right. And then the best offense is a great defense. What do I need to do to be able to put my business in a strong position? So being able to help them see that, again, HR is an investment. It can help grow your business. It's not an expense that, oh, my gosh, I have to write a check to someone to tell me what to do, and I should be able to do what I want to do. Again, if you're going to have a business in the United States and the state of North Carolina, there are certain things that you have to do as a responsible business owner. So what are those things? Let's check those boxes and put the defense on the bench and get the offense on the field and, you know, have a great offense like some of the teams that we saw this weekend in the playoffs. I mean, you know, Peyton.
Playoffs Manning, for what? Just kidding.
You know, having a Peyton Manning that can score. I mean, you want to be in that kind of position because you're the head coach of your team and you need players in skilled positions, and being able to have everybody on the same page on your offense and grow that business and, you know, score points in football, but basically, you know, gain market share, have new clients, really knock it out of the park with customer service, and listening and helping them see as they grow their business and they have all these opportunities and ideas, well, what does that mean to your people? You know, what kind of people do you need for those types of situations, and how do we, is there somebody that we can promote from within and develop them and bring somebody in behind them, or is it a special skill set that we need to go out and find? Just like when Peyton Manning came on the market, I mean, who would have thought the Indianapolis Colts would have ever let him go? And all of a sudden, he's available. Only a few teams were in a position to actually even make a play for him. And he didn't go to the highest bidder. He went to the team, in this case, the Denver Broncos, that really had a package that met his needs. And they were able to grab an, you know, awesome talent to really move their organization forward because they were prepared. They were ready to move their organization forward.
They were ready to be proactive and put the game on the field rather
exactly
than reacting
right
to what everyone else was doing.
Exactly.
So I think there's a consistent theme here, ladies, that we are all talking about when we reach our customers. It's about, we're not selling to them, we're educating them.
Yes, absolutely.
We're sharing information, we're equipping them to make a great decision, and recognizing that they may not know everything they need to know, but they're capable of learning it.
Yes.
And they're capable of executing it on the field of play.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. Education and encouragement. And a lot of small business owners don't have an encourager in their business life because it's them and maybe a handful of folks. Just being an encourager and thanking them for being in business, because it takes a lot of, I'll just say, guts and courage. And
blood, sweat, and tears,
yes,
and prayer.
And I just want to say thank you to all the small business owners out there. You know, this country needs you, and you know, anything, you know, I'd like to be involved with those kind of folks that, you know, what can I do to help you be more successful?
Well, I think there's a mistake in the media. Although you hear them quote the statistics that the majority of job creation, the majority of jobs are in the small businesses. When you look at the business shows or the news, they're focusing on Google or some of the big players that, and forgetting that they started out small,
right,
and that their customers are small.
Yes.
And that the majority of jobs, the growth, the job creation, the economy is built around small businesses.
Absolutely.
There is one consistent thing that Anne's gotta love, that there is no business without people.
That's right.
Right? There are people, employees, the owners, the customers. And Molly, you're serving that same group from a different perspective and taking the personal side of it. But as entrepreneurs, as small business owners, we have challenges. And you talked about it. Your schedule changes like mine does. I never end the day with the calendar looking the same way it started out for the day.
Yeah. Things get crossed out, moved around. We're calling, basically in my world, I'm calling audibles all the time. You see Peyton Manning calling audibles? Yeah, I definitely.
Okay, so for those of us who do not know what an audible is that a change in game plan for the day or on the field?
You step out and what you think you're going to see is not what you see. Things move around, so therefore you have to move in order to be able to accomplish what you need to accomplish.
Okay, so that means you have a business plan. Molly talked about it earlier. I harp on it on a consistent basis on the show. Business plan. You have a plan. Last week I talked about goal setting and spending time and working on your goals, and we've talked today about carving out time to work on your business. And so we're setting here. And today we're in our business, and heaven forbid, we walked in the door. Let's say we're in business with our spouse, male or female, whichever, you know, and suddenly we're getting a divorce, right? And so we're both employees of the company. We're both owners of the company. And out of the blue, and let's just say being women, we'll know that side of the conversation a little bit better. Then we get that notice. Our husband says he wants a divorce. We have a business together. And this day is not going as planned. From that perspective, how do we manage our time? What do we do stepwise? Molly, personally and professionally in that business, give me two things that you can think of right off the top that after you've heard that news and the emotions, the tears, the what in the has happened, and the praying, the immediate prayers like, dear Lord, help me. What can we do to be proactive and take action in our financial and our business life? Two things.
The best thing to do after you have gotten past the tears, as you said, is you have to talk to a professional. Talk to two, talk to three, but don't make a move. Don't think you know what you're doing or what's going on. And talk to a professional and get good advice. You really absolutely have to.
So when we're talking professionals, and for this situation, this is what I tell my clients. You're going to need an attorney for the business.
Yep.
You're going to need a divorce attorney.
Yes.
You're going to want to talk to a qualified, experienced financial advisor. You're probably going to want to talk to an HR person, because if you're both working in the company, you're going to have to work out that dynamics if you're going to continue to do that.
Right.
You don't want collateral damage in the business. Your employees can't take sides, shouldn't be asked to take sides. And you're going to have to start thinking about, what are you going to tell your accountant? Because it's an immediate financial issue. And let's just say everybody's being above board and ethical on this, that you don't find out that they've cleaned out the bank accounts when this has started. And from your perspective in HR, someone's going through a divorce. They're going to decide that they're going to continue to run the company together because they can't afford to buy each other out, that kind of thing. What kind of things would you tell them to do to be proactive to address this with the employees, with their customers who may be impacted by this, and to make sure the business stays healthy through this process?
I would definitely sit down and we would define roles as, you know, who's going to do what. You know, make it very, very clear who's got responsibility for what. And then once that game plan is sort of developed, definitely want to communicate with your employees and let them know what's going on, who's going to be, you know, responsible for what. And then also, you know, basically you want the customer experience to, they shouldn't even be involved. They shouldn't see anything.
They shouldn't
different.
Know what's going on.
Exactly. It should be totally transparent. People should be, you know, servicing customers, installing, you know, wiring, whatever it is that you do, it should be very transparent. They shouldn't see anything. And if any issues come up, they need to be addressed immediately. And it can't just be, he said, she said. Definitely have to have a third-party person in there to help sort of pull the emotion back out and let's look at what's the best thing for the business, not only short-term but long-term, and definitely getting professional help. You need an attorney involved. You probably need your CPA involved. Getting all those key people involved as well so that everything stays, you know, hopefully as amicable as possible. The business stays intact. You continue to grow and, you know, whatever happens in the personal life doesn't spill into the business as best as you can manage that.
So facing the realities of how relationships change, let's say someone's sitting there today, husband and wife, and they're thinking about starting a business together. Could you give them each two things that they should do and think about from your perspectives in starting that business to protect themselves from a sad occurrence of a possible divorce, one of them wanting to leave the company, things of that nature? So what do we need to prepare in the good times when we're starting just in case things don't go exactly as planned and you have to call an audible? I think I used that correctly.
You did. Good. I'll start. I actually have worked with several husband and wife teams in small businesses. That's very, very common that I come across. Again, it's defining roles, not having like, well, we'll both work on this. It usually doesn't work out very well that way. Defining roles, responsibilities, and oftentimes it's also, if you say you're going to do it 50-50, there's no one to break a tie. So there has to be, is it 51-49? Who's going to have the say-so when it comes down to it? And then having that outside, maybe business coach that is also involved, so you always have that third party to help basically referee the
been there
different issues that you know come up, and then basically reaching out to those resources. You know, if I'm great at marketing and my husband's great at sales, we still need the business side, the money. We need to reach out and identify those resources right away so that we don't start having checkbook issues and payroll issues, those sorts of things.
And forgetting to build the clients.
Yes, forgetting to build the clients. That sounds like it would never happen. It does happen. It definitely happens.
I actually have one service provider that every December I have to remind him to send me a bill for a retainer for the coming year. And it usually arrives around February or March just because I keep reminding him. And it's just like, okay, I'm betting all of your customers don't remind you to bill them. And that's a challenge. Especially for a small business, if it's not in your bank account when it comes time to deliver services, pay your customers, pay your CPA, then you got a little bit of a mismatch there. And what I find with the married couples running the business is they tend to make the disagreements personal.
Yeah. It's so have a forgiving spirit. Everybody makes mistakes.
Well, and the thing, I remember one sitting at a dining room table with one couple and he's very spreadsheet, detail-oriented, needed 100% of the data precisely right to make a decision. And his wife is sitting over here, and she takes no data, no input. It's just what her gut feels. And I was constantly, and I'm, the timeout symbol, I do know that from sports. I was constantly going, timeout. That's, that's a good skill set. This is a good skill set. You guys got to
pull it together
and leverage those two personality types to make the best decisions. So, Molly, do you see a difference when you're working with the married couples or recently divorced or transitioning couples as to how they approach and how they need to approach a business versus sort of, I'm going to guess, they're kind of ad hoc a lot of times in how they're handling their financial matters at home and at work?
Yeah, it's a lot of ad hoc, as you say. You just have a lot of personality differences come into it. Just listening to the scenario you just presented of the wife being kind of a generalist and the husband being very specific and exact, it starts bringing to mind those Myers-Briggs personality differences.
So explain to everybody what Myers-Briggs is, just in case our listeners don't know.
Yeah, it's a way of defining personalities. Myers-Briggs picked a certain way, four different parameters, I believe, to define personalities, and they broke them down. And you have a little bit of probably a top two personality, but you can be a perceiving type, you can be a judgmental type, you can be introverted, you can be extroverted.
Right. So introvert and extrovert is how you're in either an E or an I, meaning how you process information and make decisions.
Yeah.
Do you like to talk through it? That's me. Or do you like to go in a quiet corner and just sit there and figure it out and in the dark and doing it by yourself? The perceiving and judging, I call it piles and organization, because perceivers tend to not mind the mess. They know exactly where everything is, but it's in a pile of paper that no one else could find. And a judger has to have everything in its place, very organized and very structured, generally. And then you have intuitive people. And you have sensing people. So they say N's and S's. And you can probably guess intuitive. You kind of go a little bit more by the seat of your pants and your gut instincts. You have information. It's just not always obvious to everybody else that you have information. I'm an intuitive. And sensing people tend to like the more data and that kind of thing. And then the final thing is, are you a feeler or a thinker? And I remember taking the Myers-Briggs test in my MBA program and getting called down to the office of the MBA program and asked to leave the program. And I'm like, why would I leave the program? Well, your Myers-Briggs test says you're an ENFP. I'm like, okay. They said, well, this is for an STJ program. I said, I'll be fine. You guys will go nuts. And that was the way it was. But so You can live your personality type in your business. When I'm working with clients and I run into a lot of ENFPs who are intuitive or more, I don't want to say emotional, but more less connected to data and are a little bit perceiving a little bit more piles of papers than getting organized. And I hear them say, I can't do that. And I have to call a flag on that play because it's like, if I can do that with the same personality type you have, your personality type is something you leverage and you work with. It can never be an excuse for not achieving and doing the right things in your businesses or your personal life. It's a cop-out to say my Myers-Briggs test says, I can't do that. So for all of those of you out there who have never taken a Myers-Briggs test, I would highly recommend it. And I would also recommend taking the Strength Finders test.
Yeah. Strength Finders, absolutely.
Yeah.
And learning to play to those strengths. Because I think when we're out there in business, we frequently look at our weaknesses. And as business owners, we've been talking about, if we're not good at it, let's look for someone else that we can pay to do that is really good at it. And that's what we're supposed to be. Biblically, community comes together. We each have strengths. Mm-hmm. And we're meant to lean on each other to make things come out to the best for all of us make it a better connection. We don't do business by ourselves.
No, I think you do far better emphasizing your strengths rather than trying to quote-unquote fix your weaknesses. Just go for those strengths that you have and work them, girl. Just go after them and, do what you can about your weaknesses, but don't focus on them. Don't try to fix them.
Well, and I said I could never have had a different brand for me or my company other than the one God hardwired into it, because there was no rewiring this. I was not born with a diplomacy gene. I'm kind of blunt. That would surprise the listeners, I'm sure, and outspoken, and I'm not quiet, and I have a very strict sense of what's right, black and white. The shades of gray make me nervous. I mean, if it's legal, we're there. If it's moral, some things can be, biblically sound or legal, and they don't necessarily run into the same. But we have to live that. We have to be true to that brand, to our strengths. And our businesses have to be authentic and built with that brand.
Absolutely. You have to be real.
So when you stand up in front of the people at the Chamber of Commerce, and I highly recommend people attending their local Chamber of Commerce, and you meet new people, that authenticity is part of drawing people to you. Mm. Didn't you find that, Molly, Ann?
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely. And people will, I frequently have people remark about that when they're talking with me, is that they will say, your heart's in the right place. So, and I think you really do have to be authentic. You have to be honest. You have to have integrity, because it's all going to come out. It's all going to show. And people want to be treated well. They're looking for people who will treat them well.
Well, and I think I was reading a book the other day, and the three things people wanted were security. And from that meant not only financial security, but safety and knowing that they're in a place that someone's not going to turn that back on them. Mm-hmm. They wanted honesty. Right? And to know where they stand with you. And so if they're not going to feel secure if they can't trust what they say to you, what they hear from you, they got to figure out. And I'll kind of segue. I had a CEO boss in a small business a number of years ago. It's been over 12 years ago now. And he said to me one day, he goes, you're the most mysterious person I've ever worked with. And I'm thinking, mysterious. Why would I be mysterious? It's like there's no edit button. It's just what it is. He goes, I can't figure out where you're coming from. And I'm like, it's probably because I'm telling you, right?
Yeah.
Because he was used to people concealing their agenda behind something else. And I can remember thinking, it's like, mysterious might not be too bad. Except for the fact that I was telling him exactly what he needed to know and what he needed to do. And so security, honesty, and the other thing that stood out was integrity. If you make a mistake, if you mess up, you own it, you fix it, you take responsibility, and people can move on from that rather than saying, I didn't do it or it was somebody else. I'm sorry, let's fix it. We can look at our politicians and know they usually get in more trouble, not for the original crime,
right?
Yeah.
But for the cover-up.
Yeah, I've had that before where I was working with a client and made some comments based on what I knew, and then once I went out and did some additional research, and got had the more specifics of the company at that point, I realized that, you know, that particular compliance issue really was something we need to pay attention to, and immediately, you know, got back in front of the business owner and said, you know, I misspoke here. This is not right. We need to do this. And, you know, definitely, you know, integrity is very important. That it takes a long time to build up, you know, respect and, you know, and, you know, let people know that you have integrity and build your reputation, but it takes a second for it to go away.
Right.
And if you don't own up to it, that's a great way to destroy it and or, you know, many, many other things. But definitely, I think honesty, integrity, and being able to provide sound counsel, advice, coaching, products, whatever it is, and standing behind them, that's very important to clients. And it's important to each of us as business owners. I try to be a connector. If I'm talking to a business owner and another need comes up, I don't want to be everything to everybody. I know that's not my area, but hey, I know a guy or I know a lady.
Right.
I'd love to introduce you and connect them with other people that can be that specific counsel that they need, and just try to be a connector for other people.
Well, I want to thank both of you ladies for connecting with Focus on Business and our listeners today. It was a great show. And everyone, the podcast is going to be posted. So if you want to listen to any of the information that we've shared again today, please visit the WCOMFM.org website. And thank you, ladies, for being here.
Thank you.
We'll have to have you back again.
Thank you, Lori.
Have a great week, everyone.